A woman walks into a Ben and Jerry's ice cream place, and she's standing there looking at the ice cream, and she orders an ice cream and a cone. You know, it's delicious. Ben and Jerry's, great ice cream and all that. But she looks over to her side when somebody walks in, and she recognizes him. And it only takes a second before she could put a name to it, and it didn't look like Brad Pitt. It was actually Brad Pitt. Well, she's all gaga. She's like, oh, Mo, he's so handsome and all that. But she's playing it cool. You know, she's playing it cool. Not going to say anything. Not going to make a big deal out of it. Doesn't say anything to him. Just pays for the ice cream and walks out of the store. Well, she's outside, and she thinks, wait a minute. Oh, gosh, I paid for all that, and I was so cool, but I forgot to get my ice cream. So she goes in, and she says to the guy, hey, where's my ice cream? You didn't give me my ice cream. And the guy said, well, yeah, I'm pretty sure I did. And Brad Pitt looks over and says, well, you know, it's right there in your purse where you put it. Yeah, well, we are right on the cusp of holiday seasons, aren't we? I mean, if they could not scare us enough with COVID, now we hear that we may not have turkeys for Thanksgiving. Have you heard that rumor? Yeah, don't take it from me, okay? It's total nonsense. There's so many turkeys out there, I don't think we need to worry about any of that. Besides, it's not that great anyway. Have you heard that, of course, there's not going to be enough stuff on the shelves for Christmas? Yeah. And I like some of your responses. I see what you guys write. I lurk. And you're like, well, that's not what Christmas is about anyway, right? You know, stuff. It's supposed to be about the birth of Jesus. And maybe if we don't have enough stuff on the shelves, we won't go all nuts about it, that sort of thing. But we are right on the cusp of the holidays. And we want to focus on things that are important and do away with things that are wasteful. Wasteful things can drag us down. The most of us lose our perspective in the rush of the events leading to the holidays. A poet said it like this. I only did what you have done 1,000 times or more. When Joseph came to Bethlehem and knocked upon my door, I did not turn the Christ away with alibi so deft. Like you, I simply gave to him whatever I had left. Yeah, think about that for just a second. There's a young writer named Jill Briscoe. I love this story. This happened back when I was just starting in ministry, where a member of the church, I was a choral director and in charge of music for about 15 years or so in different churches. And people would come up to me and say, hey, listen, I got a new piano. Do you want the old one? And, you know, in fact, the last church that I served, I think they had like 8 old pianos. Only one of them could play. All the rest of them were just trash. But, you know, you got to take it. You got to be nice. You don't want to turn it around. Well, this person, Jill, said that she kind of got in a little bit of trouble because when the person said, I've just bought a brand new piano, and do you want the old one? And she said, I'd much rather have the new one. Yeah. And when she got in trouble, she just told the officer, she says, you know, I guess I shouldn't have done that, but I just get so tired of God getting the old pianos. It's a thought worth thinking about. For many of us, in the hustle and the bustle of our lives, we only give what is left over. For some, it's the fading embers of our energies at the end of a day. For others, it's the faint hope and promise that, well, somehow I'll do better next year. So Jesus tells this wonderful story of opportunity knocking at the doors of 3 men. A wealthy man planned on a trip and called in 3 of his trusted servants according to their abilities, according to their capacities. He gave them money to invest while he was away. He didn't tell them how to invest, which is an indication that he trusted them and trusted in their ability. He trusted them and their capabilities for each of the 3 opportunity was knocking. The results, though, speak for themselves. 2 of them were productive, doubling what they had been given. 1, however, did nothing and played it safe. The one who received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, my grandmother up in Kentucky told me that this is the way they used to do it. They would take ball jars and they would put a little extra money in there, coins or bills or whatever, and take it out to the back behind the barn and they would bury their money. This is how they kept their bank going, I guess, but anyway, the same with many people back in Jesus' time. They would take their money and bury it. And money buried this way might be safe, but it won't earn anything for the owner. And that was the problem with this particular servant. He had never heard the Chinese proverb, you must go out on a limb if that is where the fruit is. I like that. You have to risk something to find a reward. And the 1 talent man risked nothing but the displeasure of his master. and he earned nothing either. Now, many of us can sympathize with that, with the man who plays it safe, who lost nothing and returned exactly what he'd been given. Maybe it's a risky time. He didn't know how long the master would be away. He was waiting for a more favorable time when his investment strategy would work out better. But being sympathetic as we might, we cannot overlook one reality. He disobeyed the instructions that had been given to him. He was told to invest what he had been given. So the bottom line is this: he missed this opportunity by a deliberate act of will. He deliberately did nothing, and the question is why? Why did he do nothing? So today we're going to look at this, and we're going to use four words to kind of frame our thoughts: appreciation, acceptance, application, and apathy. First word is to appreciate. It's obvious that the man did not appreciate this opportunity that had been given to him. Some of us are in the same situation. More and more I'm aware that the numbers of people in our society who are not doing very much, and it is a shame because they have been given so much. One of the great things that came from the COVID thing, which I can find good things everywhere with it, is the music program of our church. You know that for the last year and a half, we have asked people, please come up and share your gifts. And they have done that. I see many of you sitting here, you've done it, you're ready to go. If all Babs has to do is just call, and people will do whatever they can. I have a good friend of mine named Ruth who has a lovely voice. She's about 85 years old now. And her voice is not what it was when she was 40. And I didn't know her then, but, you know, just not the same thing. And she's always talking about to me, like, you know, I wish, George, that if you could have heard me when I was 40. And I would ask her to do solos. And she says, I can't do that anymore. If you had heard me when I was 40. And I said, well, let's do a duet. She says, yeah, I'd love to, George, but if you could hear me when I was 40. And I'm like, Ruth, you know what? I'm going to say a prayer for you today. And she says, okay, that's great. What is it? I said, I'm going to pray that God takes your voice away so you never sing again. And she was, what? I said, God gave you this wonderful gift, and you were 84 years old. And rather than sharing that gift, which I promise you is still very good, you won't do it because of your pride. So if you're not going to use the gift God gave you, you're not going to miss it, are you? She said, yeah. She still didn't sing any solos, but still, I thought it was a good point. Anyway. So the first word is to appreciate. And the book, Seizing the Moments, there's a story about a farmer who just about had it with farming. It was tough. He had been digging in the soil for years and tended the crops, and finally he was just sick and tired of all of it. So he wanted a new kind of life. He made up his mind to sell his farm, to move. So he called in a real estate agent, and the real estate agent came over, and they wrote up a description, you know, the little thing that goes into the advertisement. It went something like this: beautiful farmhouse, ideal location, excellent barn, good pasture, fertile soil, up-to-date equipment, well-bred stock, it's near town, near church, near school, and has good neighbors. And then the farmer said, well, read that to me again. And the agent read it again, and he said, you know what? No sale. All my life, I've been looking for a place like that. But we often do not appreciate what we have. We take these things and for granted. The one talent man lost his opportunity because he did not appreciate what he had been given. And the second word is accept. The parable reminds us that we come into this world with certain things, certain abilities and advantages we will not select and cannot alter. Some of us have some disadvantages or lack of ability that we cannot alter as well. Some people are gifted more than others. And the parable makes that clear: to each according to his gifts. Some have a rare combination of gifts that puts them out in front of the pack, but all of us have something. And productive living begins with accepting what we have and who we are and a determination to apply that. We all have some sort of talent, some limitations, but we must accept the reality of the things that we do have and seize the opportunity. It's easy to say it, but it's hard to do it. I know people who spend their lives literally running away from who and what they are. They simply cannot accept what they have. I know others who live their lives around a nagging question: what if? What if? What if I had taken another job? Well, you didn't, and that leaves you with the job that you have. What if I had married somebody else? But you didn't. So why don't you work at making the marriage you have something that makes your heart sing? What if you had gone to another college? Get on your knees and thank God that there was a college at all that would take you. What if he'd gone to another church? No, really hadn't thought about that. When interviewing for one of my positions at a former church, I went to see some of my old friends, and this friend of mine, a pastor, was his church was in serious trouble. I mean, it was just a nightmare situation. Everything was broken. Nothing was going to work. It was really one of the deadest churches I'd ever seen. And I was sitting in his office, and I was admiring all the things around his desk and all. You know, we all had that junk. And he had this file cabinet that was a beautiful wooden one. And I said, "That's really lovely." He says, "Yeah, that's my special file cabinet." I said, "Well, but what's in it?" He said, "Well, all the good ideas that I want to use for the next church that I go to that's worthy of all those great ideas." And I looked him in the eye, and I said, "Brother, you need to open up that file cabinet, and you need to do it today." Yeah. We have these great ideas, but we don't apply them. God gives us these things, and we should at least be able to accept it. There comes a time when you have to quit running around, and you just have to dig in. If you can't, then you are like the one talent man who didn't or couldn't accept the talents that he had, and so he ended up with nothing. Now, I've been here long enough now to be out of the honeymoon period. It's just interesting that COVID hit right at the end of the honeymoon period. But most ministers cannot get anything done the first 5 years. And for those of you who were Methodists or are Methodists, do you remember when they would move pastors every 3 years? Yeah, it was statistically shown that pastors are not accepted by their congregations completely until after 5 years. You see, the first couple of years, they just want to see, do you know what you're doing? The next couple of years is, that, are you going to go nuts if we support you? And then finally, by the fifth year, they're like, yeah, we're on your side. We can make this work. 5 years it takes. I went to worked at a church that had had seven pastors before I got there. Seven pastors. They had all been there 5 years or less. It was like a revolving door, just as soon as they were accepted. And I was told by one of the elders, he says, listen, you know, you can do us a big favor if you just stay put. I was like, well, I can't be too hard, you know, stick around. But this church has responded so well to new leadership and to new things. We have officers that are dedicated, that make things happen, that I don't have to tell them anything at all. In fact, I have to get out of their way because they're doing so much, so many wonderful things. It is still, though, a work in progress. I've said it so many times, and I'll say it again, that the future of this church is bright, it's beautiful, but it is before us. The best days of First Presbyterian Church in New Smyrna Beach are ahead of us. Not behind, they are ahead of us. So, as your preacher, I want to tell you that we do all these things, but we do them to the glory of God. Excellence can be attained if you care more than others think is wise. Excellence can be attained if you risk more than others think is safe. Excellence can be attained if you dream more than others think is practical. Excellence can be attained if you expect more than others think is possible. The one talent man did nothing because he did not appreciate what he had. He did not accept that he had at least one talent that was his. And brings me now to the third word, which is apply. No talent is worth anything unless it is applied. We all know people of enormous capacity who never get anything done because they never apply the talent that they have. Maybe this man was a procrastinator. The master didn't give him a timetable of when he would return. So like most of us, he figured, I got plenty of time. It's all right. It's safe in the backyard, in the ground. It's okay. But suddenly the moment of accountability is at hand, and now it is too late. We all have a job to do, and that means we must apply the talents that God has given to us to those tasks. Most people spend their entire lives on a fantasy island named Someday Isle. Someday I'll do this. Someday I'll get around to doing that. There's a letter you need to write to a friend. Why not do it tonight? There's a relationship under strain. Why not make the first move to straighten things out? There's a person whose forgiveness you need. Why not say that you're sorry today? There is a task you need to undertake for Christ in this church. Why not volunteer to do it today? You need to walk closer to God, and He is waiting for you to make a move. So do it today. Apply what you have. It's not an option. It is a requirement. And do it now. Well, the one talent man did nothing because he did not appreciate, he did not accept, he did not apply. And finally, the word apathy. Webster Dictionary defines apathy as a lack of feeling or emotion, a lack of interest or concern or indifference. Another dictionary says that it's unconcerned, unimpressed, unexcited, unmoved, unstirred, and untouched. It sounds like something that is dead, doesn't it? But it is. One who is apathetic just doesn't care. The one talent man just didn't care about the master's money. He was interested in watching out for himself, and he said, I knew you were a hard man, so I protected what you gave me, and here it is. His concern was not for his master. His concern was solely for himself. And we are all accountable for what we have been given. And the work of God in this world is not so much impaired by bad men and bad women as it is by good men and good women who do nothing. A poet said it this way, to live adventurously for God, you have not dared. Where there were needs that we might fill, we have not shared. But all our wrong and thought and deed has sprung up from this poisonous seed. We have not cared. The church today has so many people who support the church, people who love the church, but they have never made a commitment to the church or made a difference in the church's life. I would rather have a church of 100 mistake-making, bungling adventurers for Christ than a church of 10,000 perfect, proper people who never make a difference. They're like people who court all their lives but never make it to the altar. I know of a couple who have dated, get this, for 47 years. Now, I don't know what a relationship that is. I don't know how to define that. But it certainly is a relationship without any risks. A commitment to a new way of doing things, of taking risks and reaching out for new things and applying your one talent, your two talents, your five talents doesn't mean all of your problems in your life will be solved. Life has its ironic twists and turns. But our parable ends on a sad note. Those who do not use what they are given are always losers in life. It is one of the choices we make in life, and our choices, good or bad, make us what we are. So my final words to you today are these. It is never too late to be what you might have been. Think about that and let us pray. Our Father, we are made aware these days of the stewardship of the things that you have given to us, the challenges that we have to face, and we are up to the challenge. We have proved that time and time again. But call forth from us our very best. When we have five talents, allow us to create five more, two more, one in particular more. And help us as we engage in the life of this church as it impacts this community at the point of people's critical need. We thank you for the privilege of doing that, for the ability to do that. And we thank you because great is your faithfulness. Amen.